You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman. And as always, I am one of the co-hosts Locked On Pacers podcast, and join me on the other line for a now Tuesday edition because we took MLK Day off is my wonderful co-host, Tony East. Tony, how are you doing?
I'm good. We didn't really take MLK off. We just We pushed it today. Yes. I'm good. I had a long day at work, but I am excited to be home and talking about basketball.
I am too. So let's just jump in it. We were talking this last thing before we.
Adam, should we do? No, let's do
live
let's
in
do,
our podcast.
Let's do some good news first.
Okay, so you knew I was going to do. So fine. What's the good news then?
Let's do some good news first. Ben Moore, the guy who was signed to a training camp contract and everybody really liked him in the preseason, got a two-way contract this week. And Ben Moore is now has 22 professional days. He can play with the Pacers the rest of the season. So good for him.
And with our badges we'll talk about later, he could get some playing time. He could at least be brought up for some stretch.
Oh, man.
Maybe. I don't know.
That's true.
Go ahead.
I never even considered that his call-up could actually kind of coincide with our bad news. I didn't think of that until you said it.
I mean, we'll hit Ben in a second, but I was actually looking at his highlights, looking at some of his stats. To be honest, I don't think this does anything, moves the needle anyway for the Pacers. He seems like an undersized power forward, and he doesn't have some special skill set like Thad Young, who's a little bit undersized too for the power forward position. So I don't think this does much, but it's good for him. He gets some money. Next year, he probably gets called up for a couple of days. He'll make the NBA daily minimum versus the D League daily minimum, or G League now, which is good for him, good for his wallet, whatever it is, but this doesn't really do much for me. Doesn't really move the needle in any direction.
No, it's just a development move. And, you know, he's looked okay in the G League. He's hitting his free throws and he's a big motor man. I think he had like 10 offensive rebounds the night before that he got signed to the two-way, which is pretty cool. But yeah, he's just really high motor.
Slow though, right?
Pretty slow.
A little bit.
But he's efficient inside scorer with a high motor who does not give up on the glass.
Yeah, I just noticed that when I'm watching some highlights, he just doesn't get very much he doesn't get going. Kind of reminds me a little bit of Al Jefferson out there. Not he's not as slow as Jefferson because he's not as old, but doesn't quite get the pace going like the team likes to play, which is, you know, I think it seemed like this is the way the Pacers are going to play probably as long as they have Turner and Vic and guys like that. They're going to try to play fast. It doesn't really fit that. So maybe he spends another year in Fort Wayne and gets in conditioning, whatever shape, but I just don't think he has the type of speed to play with the Pacers now or really in the near future.
We'll see who he even fits with and when he plays. You know, the two-way thing is going to be interesting for them, especially with our bad news.
Yeah, so our bad news, we were talking about this before we hit live on this podcast, like I was saying, and that is that you think Miles Turner is going to be out to March 23rd.
Yeah-ish is my guess.
So you had some numbers about that you were actually making sense to me, at least when you were saying them.
So Jeff Stotts is the injury master on Twitter. I don't know if you know of his blog. It's called In Street Clothes, which is a clever name for an injury blog, but it's all focused on NBA injuries and body parts. He is a certified athletic trainer. And when Nicholas Batum had his elbow injury before the season, his elbow sprain, his was a little bit worse than Turner's, I think, but he was projected to miss 8 to 10 weeks. And in the article he wrote about it, it says, this is all quote, "The average number of missed games for confirmed UCL sprains in the NBA is about 21 games between 6 and 7 weeks, but that includes several players that just suffered partial tears. Blake Griffin missed 26 games with his injury, and Andrea Bargnani missed 40 with his." So Bargnani had the injury twice, and one of Bargnani's was only on a dunk attempt like Turner's, and he missed, I believe, 26 games that time. So if you look 26 to 30 games down the line for Turner, that's mid-March, and there's a big gap before this Clippers game, March 23rd. So that's my official, unofficial prediction for his return.
So is it a confirmed UCL sprain or just a ligament sprain? Because
ligament I could find in the elbow in my research. So
no, that definitely makes sense. The UCL is where you also have Tommy John surgery if you're a baseball player. That's how I remember it. But No, I think you're right. If you had some numbers of guys missed between about 25, 30 games, that puts it right there in March. But it's kind of weird. We talked about this too when we were talking before the show, is the fact this team keeps the injury wrap so close to the vest, it seems like. You know, with Vic, we didn't really know. We didn't know he was hurt. And then we didn't, it seemed like every game it was like, oh, he could play, could not play. Like they kept the stuff close to them and they're really being really mum on Miles Turner still. So maybe when you go to practice, you'll be able to ask Nate about it or somebody, but it seems like they're not going to give any information unless they have to. So I don't think we will know for sure whether it's actually a UCL sprain, ligament sprain or some, you know, maybe a forearm sprain, something like that. I don't know. I mean, I think it's probably a UCL sprain, like you're saying, but I don't think we'll ever actually know.
Yeah, I could be wrong about the injury and then just completely disregard everything I said before this, but that's the only thing I could find about it. And there's also a muscle strain too, I think, was something else that was vague in it. So it does not sound very good.
No, it doesn't. And he heard it on that Monday against the Bucks. He had that huge slam where he bang jumped almost from in front of the free throw line, including just basically looked like almost like you would say hyperextend your elbow in some sense. But disappointing because he's already missed. He missed 7 games earlier this year. If he misses another 20, that's almost a third of his season at least he's going to miss, which is just not good for a young player trying to develop. You know, remember his first season, he missed 25 games his first season. Luckily, he played all the games last year. So it was just, it's another setback and hopefully will be a promising career. You said it, somebody tweeted out that this would just be a blimp on his Hall of Fame thing. I think we need to slow the roll there, but it's what it is. But at least we'll get to see. Was he Sabonis? I mean, that's the one positive is Sabonis has been really good in terms of absence. Really he was earlier in the year, and he's been really good recently. I know he only had 4 points against the Suns, but he had 14 rebounds, and he had 15 rebounds the previous game. So we get to see Sabonis, which is kind of nice because he really seems to thrive when he plays center on the Pacers team, especially the starters. He does a really good job.
Yeah, getting to play with a little bit better passers and just a more ball movement-y lineup with the starters has really made him thrive. And you know, he shoots a lot more with the second unit, which helps his scoring numbers, but hurts his rebounding numbers. But with the starters, you know, other guys are shooting more and he's just creating space with his roles and screens. So he fits really well with them. He's looked awesome in these 2 games.
Yeah. Plus he plays really well with Vic. So that also, yeah, they have a nice little chemistry going. But I mean, I said it even before Turner got hurt that I thought Sabonis is playing himself into, should he be the starting number 4 on this team when he was scoring, you know, 20 points a game for a couple. He had a 24 and 22 point game last week. So, you know, that's a good thing. We have to see a lot of Jefferson now, which isn't the greatest thing, but he hasn't been a too negative on the court. Basically, he was a plus 10 against the Suns and minus 3 against Cleveland and minus 5 against the Heat, but they lost by 8 to the Heat and every player was a minus. So he was about average there and Cleveland game close to even. So I'd say if Jefferson can be a net neutral, that's good enough, right? Basically, the net neutral is good enough, but I don't know. They got to piece together minutes basically to make up for Turner, who plays like, I think, 27, 28 minutes a game when he's healthy.
Yeah. And, you know, I wrote about him last week, I was shocked to see that he's shooting a career high from the field. And, you know, keeping that up can really help him be that net neutral, that because he is just like 90s modem levels of slow on defense. And they just go right at him with pick and whatever's every possession, and he can't recover to stop anybody. But on offense, he's got that old style Shaquille O'Neal back to the back kind of style of play, and he's good at scoring in that situation, but he can't pass out of it or anything like that. So you just have to work around his strengths, and you can make him effective on offense, but on defense, he's kind of useless. So we'll have to see how he can pick it up, and if they just decide to get creative with lineups and keep him out of the game as much as they can.
So do you think Jefferson probably got to score between 8 and 12 points a game to actually be effective on the court, right? If he doesn't reach that 8-point mark, basically it's just, he's been a dud out there. Cause if he can't score 8-10 points, he's clearly going to be probably a double digit minus on the floor most games, right?
I think it depends on his shooting percentage, right? Like if he scores 4 points, but he only shot once, then okay, fine. But if he scores 4 points and he shot 6 times, then we're screwed. Huh?
But if he's shooting, if he's not shooting, what is he doing on the court? He's just standing there, basically, setting right?
Screens, but yeah, pretty much.
Setting screens, sort of.
Sort of. He gets his body in the way, but it's not really a screen.
Yeah. When I was listening to the Running the Break podcast, another one of our rival podcasts, the new starter, I guess we call it rival, but they were talking about just how Jefferson, it took him like that Miami game to really play himself into shape, which is interesting. I thought they were talking about that, but also just the fact that he thinks he can sort of play with this team, but he also thinks that teams have gone so away from like post games that he kind of has an advantage here because a lot of players defensively haven't seen a player who just backs him down and banks it off the glass a lot, which I don't know if that's actually going to prove to be anything positive, but if that's kind of the thing Jefferson does well, I mean, he does a nice job. You get him in the right position down low, he can take most centers with him to the rim and score, or, you know, kind of do a little shake movement off the glass. He's got some little touches that at least in his prime are really, really effective. You know, now they're obviously a lot less effective because he's nowhere near his, you know, at one point he averaged 28 points a season, a game over a season, which is incredible. But I don't know. We'll see. He's going to get some time, right? He's probably going to play 15 minutes a game for the foreseeable future if Turner's out for the next at least month.
Yeah, we'll have to hope, like you said, he can just be in neutral and the starters can carry him to victory. Or maybe you try to find a funky lineup that he somehow works in, but I'm skeptical of that one.
Speaking of minutes, let's hit our last topic before we talk about the games coming up this week. And that is, I want to talk about minutes restrictions and sort of playing guys less minutes, kind of trying to steal minutes from bench players here and there. So against the Suns, the Pacers played all 12 players. I mean, it was a blowout, so that's why. But that's something that I think need to be trying to do more. They only played Depot 21 minutes. If you haven't noticed, I've used like three different nicknames for Victor. Now Victor, Vic, Depot. I'm just going to keep trying different ones. I like calling him out. He's like, got a lot of good nicknames. But they only played him 21 minutes because I think, you know, I've talked about it a couple weeks now that McMillan is starting to realize that he might be wearing these players down. The Pacers play at this ridiculous pace, or actually, if you look at the miles traveled per game, all five of their starters are in the top 100 in the league. I couldn't find another team that was in that at all, that had all five of their starters in there. And the Warriors, who play pretty fast, have three. But also the Pacers' pace has fallen over the past week, or not past week, but over the past month even. And they're actually like 17th in the league in pace when I think they were top 10 at one point through the first 20 or 30 games. So it's all these things. And I just think they've got to find a way to steal minutes off their bench, because if they don't, they're going to run some of these players into the ground.
And I don't know if you read it, but Ryan Eggers at 8.9 seconds wrote about this today. They have a lot of games the rest of the season where they have a rest disadvantage. So the other team has more games off before the game than the Pacers do. So they're going to have to do their best to use all their depth they can, because, I mean, the injuries have hurt them now, but it gets even worse when you're tired.
They actually, they play, I think, four back-to-backs in their next, like, 10 games.
Yeah, if you're listening to this, they played the Jazz on a back-to-back last night. Then they have 2 days off and then another back-to-back. It's stupid.
And then they play a back-to-back against Cleveland and Orlando in a week from now, or 12 days from now. Yeah, and they play the first week of February, they play a back-to-back. You know, it's weird how their back-to-backs are all clumped together. It was that way the early season, too. They played six back-to-backs in the first 20 games, and they're probably playing four or five back-to-backs in a 15-game stretch again, which is
annoying.
Because they're built-in losses. And especially when they lost the Heat, where they had a game where they had a team coming off back-to-back and couldn't steal it, that hurts them too. And it's all these little things, because especially when they're going to be so tight in that eight seed or the nine seed or the seven seed, you know, they're all, those spots are going to be so close. It's like such little room for error that if you lose a back-to-back, so you lose on, let's say, the first game and second game, it's going to hurt you long-term. It's all these little things. And so it was good against the Suns that they were able to sort of, you know, Khloe McMillan had a plan once they were up big. I'm not going to play any of my starters. No starter played more than 25 minutes. I think Thad Young played 25. So he at least had a plan, but they got to hopefully kind of get that recipe to work again. You know, they play Cleveland the first set of back-to-back next time, and they're not going to be able to blow Cleveland out like they were able to blow out the Suns. Same thing with Portland this week. They're not going to be able to blow Portland out like they were able to blow out the Suns yesterday. So it's going to be really kind of interesting to watch how they kind of figure it out.
Yeah, it will be. And I don't know what the answer is until Glenn Robinson comes back too, but I'm sure Nate will have to try his best to juggle stuff. Thank God Joe Young has looked competent recently.
Yeah, and I think we're seeing a lot of Jefferson, which is going to make you mad, right? You see too much Big Al.
After I wrote about him, I'm more excited to watch him, but not very much excited.
Yeah, plus he's so old that, you know, if he playing this many minutes, he's going to get hurt. I just feel like, you know, he's bound to have some kind of ding that's going to throw. I mean, any little injury to him is going to really throw off any part of his game. And they really have no other center they could throw out there besides EK, who's nowhere ready to play.
Not even close. Yeah, that would, I mean, I want to see him a little bit, but I don't think it's a good idea.
Yeah,
They did go with that at center a little bit against the Suns, so maybe we'll see some of that. But I'm doubtful that can work for more than like 3 or 4 minutes at a time.
What did you think about it? I don't really like it that much. I think he's too small. Like, he's already an undersized power forward. It's not really a good system. But maybe they can stretch the floor out so well that it doesn't make a difference.
It would only work on offense. It would be horrible on defense. you'd have to catch it in a good lineup situation for it to work at all.
Yeah. And so, like I said, I mean, it was nice to see EK play 5 minutes and Poitras play 5 minutes, but they're going to have to really steal some minutes from Leaf now. Leaf's going to have to play a decent role now towards the end of the stretch, at least with the turnaround. So it stinks, but you know, at least they got their best player still, and they were able to win without. They've now won what? They've won two or three without Turner, so that's not the end of the world. I mean, they seem like they have a style play that can somewhat win. You know, they've kind of figured out how to use the bonus as kind of a download banger and let Depot do his thing and maybe try to be evenly distributed on the offensive end. But anything else you got before we head to the talk about the games coming up this week?
I got nothing. I'm excited to watch Ben Moore. I hope Glenn Robinson comes back soon, but we already touched on all that good jazz.
Yep. So when we come back, we'll be talking about the upcoming games of the Pacers. Well, the rest of the Pacers West Coast road trip. All right. So the Pacers got three games coming up. They play the Trailblazers, the Lakers, and the Spurs. If you're listening to this on, we know this on a Tuesday now, so they already played the Jazz. Tony, I didn't really talk about the Jazz game that much. I talked a little bit about it on Monday's show, but we're kind of going to skip it because we're recording this before the game because it's 6 o'clock on Monday. We didn't want to stay up to record at midnight. We thought that might be bad for Tony's job, who he's already stretching his boss to do things for this podcast. So we don't want to make Tony's boss mad by having him show up to work late or tired or whatever it is. So, but like I said, the first game the Pacers play is against the Portland Trailblazers. They lost to this team already once this year, 114-96, I believe, the score of the first game of the season, actually. First game without Turner, really nothing to take from that game. And if any significance, Portland is obviously led by basically a three-headed monster of Lillard, McCollum, and Nurkic. What are Portland's numbers in the league?
Portland is 16th in pace, shockingly 18th in offense, and more shockingly, 5th in defense.
Oh, wow. So I didn't know that good defensive, that good of a defensive team.
I didn't either.
I never thought Lillard was that good a defensive player. I mean, maybe it's just biases from previous seasons and previous, like, you know, biases, but I never thought he was that good a defensive player. I never thought McCollum was that good a defensive player, but maybe some combination of Aminu and Nurkic is not terrible. Maybe
Nurkic, that's how they're able to kind of call out the rim is what I get the impression of for people that have talked about it, but it is very surprising.
Yeah, he's averaging 1.3 blocks a game, so maybe that's what it is.
He's been really, 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 really struggling on offense this year, but he has been really good on defense, so it's okay.
What's even more crazy, I think, about the Trailblazers is that so basically they're kind of like a worse version of a big three. Like their big three is Lillard, McCollum, Nurkic. Those three guys shoot, I think, 58% of the team shots. They're the only three guys averaging more than 10 shots a game on this team. I just think it's kind of odd that they've sort of like – I used to call Lillard and McCollum the worst version of Steph Curry and Klay Thompson. That's kind of what, when you add Nurkic, it's like the worst version of like a big three. They're like not good enough really to do much. You know, they're maybe a mediocre borderline playoff team, but they're not going to, you know, the first one upset. They're not going to do anything really crazy in the playoffs, but you know, they have a good enough team to just kind of probably get to 43 or 44 wins a season kind of thing, which is something in the NBA at least.
Yeah. And they'll be close to the playoffs for their, whatever, like fifth or sixth year in a row or something awesome in the Dame era. So side note on that big three, if I could have any random one player in the NBA just be on the Pacers for fun and for fit, it'd be CJ McCollum.
I would agree. I've had him on my fantasy team for a couple of years now, actually 2 years now I've had him, but he is like such a sharpshooter, and he could play the Bojan role so well to a level that would be, I mean, it would be incredible. I mean, I can't even imagine what kind of – I mean, I think he'd average more than 20 points a game if he played in Bojan's spot, just because if he got the same shots Bojan got, he would hit them at a much higher rate than Bojan does.
Yeah, and he can dribble and create a little bit, and he's just really exciting to watch. I think it'd be an exceptional fit next to Oladipo for sure.
But so you think McCollum is a better shooting guard than Vic?
No, I don't. But I don't want them to. I want Vic to play point guard if they're on the team. If they happened to be on the team together.
Okay, I'm not saying they're on the same team. That's kind of where Vic's not a next step is. I would say McCollum was probably the fifth or sixth best shooting guard in the league, give or take. They're on a. I mean, so is Vic in the top five? Basically, what I was asking you there. So maybe right now he is the way he's been playing. Sure. But McCollum has more history, so McCollum has a track record of putting up the numbers he has. Vic has. Now, 37 games, give or take. So, who do you have for your butcher?
I don't know. Well, Dame missed a few games, I know, recently. I don't know if he – I know he's been back, but I don't know how healthy he is. But he is the obvious choice for Butcher. He played awesome in the first game. And, you know, he can really get to the rim. And without Turner, it's going to be easier for him to score there. And Collison hasn't really been awesome on defense this year. So I expect Lillard to have all the opportunity he can to get to the rim and score and have easy finishes around the basket and easy threes. I know that's like a lame pick, but got to go with Dame here.
Yeah, I would agree with you. Lillard is scary as – I mean, I'm not going to cuss, so I'm not going to say it. But he's extremely scary. But though, I think Nurkic too. If I had a Butcher, I would say is Nurkic just because I'm interested to see the matchup of him and Sabonis. That's what it is more than anything, because I think they're similar players. Nurkic is a bigger player because he has more experience than Sabonis, but he's not like that. You know, Nurkic is in his third season, but it's interesting to see. I think we'll see that matchup, but I think Nurkic can take advantage, especially really shot blocking ability because Turner's going to be out, and I don't think Sabonis is like this a superb. You know, if the guy posts him up and won't get beat by him sometimes, so. I think Nurse could be the Butcher, but most likely it's going to be Lillard. But, you know, Lillard's probably going to get us 25 no matter what happens.
Yeah, I agree. And another thing with Nurkic, this is completely unrelated to his play on the court. I wonder if him and Bojan are, like, tied or anything because they're both from Bosnia.
Is Bojan from Bosnia or is he from another one of those
Bosnia, Herzegovina, isn't he? I thought so. I might be wrong about that. Now that I say that, I feel wrong about that. Now I have to look it up. Oh, they're both Bosnian. They're both Bosnian. I knew that.
Okay.
They're both born in Bosnia, but Bojan is Croatian in nationality. That's why he plays for their national.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know how that works. It's hard. Not that it's hard, but there's a lot of small countries over in Serbia. I mean, in that area. And it's a lot of changing
stuff.
So not to get too much into that, but I wonder if I agree with that. Nurkic knows Bojan, but I think Lillard and Nurkic are the two. I think they're going to probably, if they lose this game, it's because Nurkic is going to have probably 20 points. If they win, they probably have to hold them under 20. I think Lillard gets his 25. You know, maybe, I guess McCollum is probably another guy, but I think McCollum and Lillard just get theirs every game. It's kind of stopping everybody else at times or not letting Lillard get to like 60. But if Lillard and McCollum get their 25 and 21, but you hold Nurkic to 10 points and maybe under 8 rebounds, which is average, that would be like, that'd be impressive and probably enough to win at least.
Yeah, definitely. And the thing with Portland is it's been easy to beat them before when you can stop those two guys. But now Shabazz Napier has been playing kind of well with Lillard's injury. So if he plays well, you know, their guard rotation is just impossible to stop.
LeBron must be really happy.
That Napier, his boy, Shabazz, the best player in the draft.
Exactly.
So hang on, interruption. Just so you guys can all hear my genuine excitement. Rob Perez, Worldwide Wob, just tweeted that he has been doing an interview all day for someone to come on his show, and it's Lance, and it's going to be awesome. I'm so excited to watch that.
Oh, I would. Lance, awesome. Oh, man. Lance, anytime Lance talks, he always says good things. He's very quotable. So he's very quotable and stuff like that. He just always, when he given the opportunity, he'll be interesting to listen to talk.
All right. I just had to bring it up while we could.
That's honestly probably more exciting this Trailblazers game will be because I'm kind of blown out. We'll do scores at the end, but who's your Pacers X Factor? It's not gonna be Lance, right?
No, it's not gonna be Lance. Well they kind of suck on the let me rephrase that. They completely suck on the wing. It's totally their worst position. They go their wing rotations like Evan Turner, Pat Connaughton, Mo Harkless, like not very good outside McCollum at all. So you got to think that someone is going to get hot on the wing, whether it's Vic or Bojan or maybe even Lance in this one. So I'm going to pick the wings in general, but I think whoever CJ's guarding, so Vic is the most likely candidate, but anyone really could just because that rotation is so weak, especially, you know, Connaughton can shoot really well, but that's about all he can do.
Yeah, I'm looking up what Vic had last time. I'm blanking now because it was so early in the season.
Of the year. No, yeah, I was going to say you did. He wasn't like killing it at that point yet.
But you said the Trailblazers play good D, so that's why I was more worried. I didn't think they really played that well defense among guards, but I don't really know. But I guess Vic is probably the guy because he's going to have to carry this team like he's done most of the season now, even more with Turner out because they're there's not anybody else to really carry the offensive load. I mean, Turner we thought kind of can at times, but Now, definitely, Vic's going to have to put up 25, 30 a game, but he's probably an X factor. Or, I mean, every game it seems like Bojan is somewhat of an X factor because if he just shoots like 6 of 10, they can win games. Like, in some of the games they lose by, like, you know, it's in the Heat game. If Bojan had made two more threes, I mean, the whole team in general, they would have won probably. I mean, it's the same thing. It seems like if Bojan shoots 60% some games, they win. If he doesn't, he shoots like 30%, they don't. It's very much hanging on if he can make that extra one or two threes. So he's probably one of the X factors.
I forget which game it was last week, but he was effective in one of them, but he only made one three, but he was getting inside and he shot like 60% inside the arc and whatever from outside. So hopefully he can get inside a little bit too, because that's been something he's been good at, but we will see.
Yeah, I think it was the Cavs game, wasn't it? Isn't that when he was most effective?
That might have been it.
Was he pretty bad? No. Well, he was 2 for 4. So maybe not. We're going to do scores at the end. So then let's move on to the Lakers. Lakers is a back-to-back, so per se, maybe. Who knows? Lakers are not that great of a team. They've been banged up all over the place. I think Ball is back. I think – who else? There was a couple other guys hurt. Ingram's been hurt.
Ball's hurt, Ingram's hurt, and Larry Nance all hurt right now.
But they also – are they all playing tonight? Because Lakers are playing right now. And no Tyler Ennis was starting tonight.
They are playing, this second.
as we're talking, they're playing. It looks like Ball is out for tonight. He is not in. But it looks like Ingram also has not entered the game yet, so he probably is out. But it looks like Larry Nance is playing. So who knows by Friday. But these guys have been kind of in and out all season with little injuries here and there. They've missed a couple games. So maybe, you know – I have to think Ball gonna be back by Friday, because they don't seem like they're like these major injuries. They look like they're kind of like tweaks to the knee, you know, twisted ankles that just precautionaries. You know, when you're a young team and you're not really trying for anything, you don't need to play your guys all the time. So I expect one or two of them to play. But one thing about the Lakers that I've noticed is just that they're like one of the most. They're like the opposite of the Trailblazers. They're evenly distributed. Where if you look at it, nobody on their team shoots more than 13 shots, and I think 7 guys are averaging double digit shots.
Yeah,
six and one's averaging 9 something.
They're trying to get development for all their guys, which is noble of them because they have so many of those guys that are young and need the ball. And, you know, between Kuzma and Ingram and Ball and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope and Jordan Clarkson and Julius Randle, like all those guys, except maybe Lonzo, there's like a chance that they trade them to get cap space for LeBron and stuff like that. So they're trying to develop these guys and keep their value high. So they really do a good job of distributing the shots and developing these guys offensively.
And it's sort of a what if look too in a Lakers team, because Randall Clarkson are probably right. They were the two guys in that supposed trade, and technically Kuzma was, but I don't count that because you can't count the pick for anything. But sort of a what the Pacers could have been if they didn't take the Oklahoma City trade, because I think the LA trade was the 27th pick, the 28th pick. Randall and Clarkson were kind of the guys that were George, at least that was the
27 offer. It was pick 27, pick 30, and those two guys, and they ended up trading those two picks. Or no, they traded with the Nets to get the Nets traded the pick to the Lakers that became Kuzma on draft night in the D'Angelo Russell trade, and then they traded one of those two picks to the Jazz to get Josh Hart, and then the other one I don't remember what they did with the other one. Dang. But they did a lot of stuff around the back of the draft.
Yeah, and it seems like Clarkson, Randall, and Nance are all available. I wonder at what point if they really think they can get George and LeBron when Ingram will be available. But it might not be till the offseason, to be honest. But one of those three guys could end up, I mean, they could make a deal with the Pacers. I think they're probably not going to because of the whole, tampering gate, I guess you would call it. So I doubt they make any trade with the Pacers after what they did to them. But, you know, if they want to clear cap space, the Pacers are sitting there with cap space, so, and expiring contracts. So just something to look towards the trade deadline. If they're really interested in clearing cap space, Pacers are one of the few teams that can actually absorb contracts, give out expirings, and might be willing to make a move like that. But who's your butcher for this team? You know, they seem to have a different guy who scores every night.
I'm a really big Lonzo guy. I know he's just such a good defender, and it's really underrated, but he can't score at all. So this will be an interesting game. I'm excited to watch him for an extended period of time instead of just, you know, the short amount that I have been. But I don't think he's the butcher. I think Kuzma's the butcher because he's such a good isolation scorer and has proven that he can really score, especially for someone who's just 22 years old, I think. So I'm excited to watch Kuzma. I think he's the most likely butcher given his ability to score.
Yeah, I think it's either Kuzma or Ingram. I agree. Ball can't score enough. Just, I mean, he might be a butcher in another way, but not in a scoring way. I guess KCP could theoretically, but Ingram seems like he's going to have the matchup of Bojan. That seems to be a really favorable matchup to most teams, is that small forward position. Even if he gets to stretch out to play against Young, he's got kind of he's got a little more speed and a little more length over Young too. So I it's either Kuzma or Ingram. My issue with Kuzma is I think he might hit, he's sort of kind of hit the rookie wall, kind of hasn't. He got over it for a little bit, but this team also has a lot of chemistry issues that just make it kind of funky every night. You know, there's the whole ball thing, and then there's, I know Walton and Pelinka and Jeannie Buss all had a dinner together, but there's just kind of like, it seems, this team just seems like the stuff going on, and it's, it seemed like the team knows they're trying to make a move at LeBron and Paul George next year, so they know they're not going to be the same, and it's, these guys like are kind of happy, but they want them, they want to be in this team because it's LA, you don't want to leave LA, but it's just kind of a weird, weird team right now.
Yeah, it is, and is, you know, Luke Walton's a really good coach and development guy, but they do have some issues going on because of someone we will not talk about at all. But yeah, it's odd to see where their franchise location is. I think 2 days ago they were like second in the lottery standings. Now they're sixth, but it's so jumbled that they're only like a game out of the second worst record. So they are kind of floundering recently, and this could be a winnable game. They have some guys that I like that make me feel like they could lose. Also something to look out for, if they are trying to dump Luol Deng, maybe they play him and try to make him look good, but he never really plays, so just who knows about that. But I would not be surprised if Luol Deng got his second appearance of the season in this game.
We could see a Luol Deng versus Al Jefferson, sort of. I know Deng plays small forward, but you could see him on the court together at the same time, which would be quite an old man's, slow man's game. Because the Lakers play fast. They're I think they're top five in pace.
They're first. They're number one in pace. We didn't do their fundamentals. I forgot. I was going to say that. Yeah, this game's going to be high scoring because they are the number one team in pace. They are, and even though they're 29th in offense, they're 13th in defense. So it's just going to be a lot of running up and down the court that allows the Pacers to hopefully score a lot, but they'll be exhausted on a back-to-back. So who knows?
Yeah, it just stinks that the games weren't flipped. The good part is they won't be able really to party that much in LA. I guess that's a good thing. But it stinks that this wasn't the first game, because this was the game. It's definitely a winnable game.
Yes, it is.
Because the Lakers just aren't. I mean, the Lakers are one of the bottom 5 or 10 teams in the league on a given night. You know, they, depending on how, you know, whether Kuzma shows up or not, basically, or Ingram shows up. But who you got for Pacers Butcher? X Factor.
The Pacers X, I was going to say. The Pacers Butcher. This one I'm going with Sabonis. Because they're so bad on offense, 29th, like I just said, they miss a lot. Going to be important to hit the glass. Brook Lopez can shoot a little bit, but he's not really a good defender inside. So if Sabonis can work him a little bit, hit the glass, do his I'm Sabonis thing that he's been doing so well recently, I think the Pacers can win for sure with that.
So there are I'm going to pick Vic because there are a couple places in the league where players that are truly all-stars like to play their best. One is MSG because of the star power, but also with Staples Center, the Friday night game. So there might be some kind of people in the crowd. I think this might be one of the games where Vic just goes off because he's playing. He's kind of an opportunity to show that he's one of the elite players in the league. And it might be kind of that his kind of game to put up 35 points.
That is a great point. The only problem is the game's at 10:30 PM and I'm going to miss half of it probably. Also, oh, yeah.
10:30 Eastern time, not 10:30.
Yeah,
good. West Coast time. It'll be prime time. There'll be lots of stars out.
So I missed this. The Lakers on a 4-game win streak right now as we're recording. They're currently playing Memphis and then OKC before the Pacers. So if they can squeak out an upset against OKC, they could be on a 6-game win streak.
They are losing Memphis, though, by 9 right now.
Yeah, wow. Wow.
So hold your horses. Who knows? But, yeah, they're not – they're not that good, but they seem to be playing well recently. I guess they've kind of played through the chemistry issue because they had lost before winning those 4 in a row. They had lost, I think they lost close to 8 in a row. So that's what. Oh yeah, they had been miserable. I mean, because at one point they were sort of hovering at 500. I thought way earlier in the season. So
yeah, like through 10 games, but they're not very good. Maybe it's.
Nope. But the Pacers do play a really good team next. Their final game of the week, their final game of the West Coast road trip is against the San Antonio Spurs, who they beat last time on.
Somehow.
I would say it was on Oladipo's coming out party. His shot, the shot that sort of, the guy where he first started doing the point down my city thing. They make shirts now off of it. So that was the first game he did that. They won. What was the score of that one? 197 or something like 98-97. I'm trying to remember if they got garbage time free throws, but Spurs are really good. What do you got for the numbers?
The Spurs, the San Antonio Spurs, are 29th in pace. Opposite of the Pacers. 14th in offense, second in defense. Classic Spurs in every way, shape, and form.
Yeah, but actually some similar thing to the Pacers. You know, I know pace is opposite, but the Pacers actually are 17th in pace now, so they're actually not that high as we thought. Yeah, they're not as high as we thought they were. They've been falling off. They're only – but the Pacers and Spurs both are teams that are in the 10 and 3-point attempts per game, but in the top 10 in 3-point percentage, which is just kind of an interesting flip. I was listening to another podcast. I was traveling home, so I got to listen to a lot of podcasts this weekend. The Ringer NBA show, one of theirs, and they're talking about that, how there's, even though, you know, this whole league is switching to 3-point shooting, the Spurs still kind of don't really shoot a lot of threes, and they're still really, really good. So maybe that isn't always the way, but it's just interesting to see that, you know, the better shooting team or teams that shoot less, but they take more, you know, they take better looking threes, you know, instead of like the Rockets where they refuse to shoot mid range jumpers and they just, all they do is jack up threes. The Spurs and Pacers are teams where they kind of take a three when they have it, but they don't mind settling for the inside too, because they've got players who can hit them at an extremely low rate, like Aldridge for Spurs and like Collison for the Pacers, or two of those guys who are willing to be run off the 3-point line and shoot a jumper from inside, you know, 15, 18 feet, and it goes in, and probably a good enough time where it becomes effective.
Yeah, it's going to – the inside thing scares me with no Turner especially. That's why I think the Spurs are going to kind of handsomely win this game. Aldridge is just so good, and with no – they're going to have no one to stop him, so –
my only question is so Kawhi and Parker have been in and out again. I think they took them a night off. Ginobili actually got hurt today in their Monday game. Kawhi didn't play. I think Parker's on the minutes restriction. I don't know how long that's going to last. Probably all season, because they really don't care about anything but making the playoffs. You know, they don't care what seed they are.
Right.
But that's just something to look at. They played earlier today. I'm trying to look up. They lost to the Knicks. They lost to the Hawks. Sorry, by three.
They lost to someone who moved up in the lottery because it changed my
the Knicks. Yeah, they lost to the Hawks. So
wow.
I'm seeing Parker played 25. So that's actually more than I thought they would let him play. But I mean, this game is really, they can stop Aldridge, they can win. If they can't stop Aldridge, they're going to lose. Because I think Kawhi will play, but who the hell knows.
Yeah, and Parker, too, if he plays, he's not that effective anymore. So I kind of want him to play and don't want Kawhi to play if the Pacers want to truly win this game.
Yeah, and I guess there's not a back-to-back for either team. San Antonio will be in Toronto on Friday, but that's not a hard travel to come back home. But, I think we don't need to do a butcher, because the butcher we said is Aldridge. X-Factors. You said Sabonis, right? That's who your X-Factor is?
No, Sabonis guarding
last game.
Aldridge. Yeah, Sabonis was my last game. It's kind of hard in this one. Rudy Gay is not playing, so if Kawhi doesn't play, I would pick Bojan, because their wing defense would just be atrocious. It'd be Danny Green and then nobody. But if Kawhi does play, their wing defense is incredible because he's the best wing defender in the league. So it's kind of hard to get a read on this one. Tony Parker, like I said, not very effective as a defensive player, but Patty Mills is pretty good, and he plays the minutes that Parker's not out there. So it's really, really hard to pick one guy that you think is going to have a favorable enough matchup that he could swing the game in the Pacers' favor. They were able to just, like, slow him down big time. They held him to, I think, 96 points in Indiana, and that's how they were able to pull that one out, and an incredible Vic shot. So I don't really have a pick. It's impossible to say. I guess you have to go with someone on the bench who will be matched up with, like, Ginobili. So maybe Corey Joseph or Lance in this one. Lance is a good pick. I'll go with Lance because – on such a regimented guy like Popovich, the only way to beat him is creativity and nonsense. And that's what Lance is great at.
Like, first of all, I thought I'd never see the day where we say Lance is the X factor in a game. So I'm going to mark this so that we just have this. Second of all, the fact that you said creativity and nonsense in the same word with Lance Stephenson is also, again, hilarious and weirdly and like eerily on the point true. Like that is what Lance is. He's his own, like, just creative, like, don't know what he can do at any moment, but can swing games at times because he can do some amazing stuff.
Because I'm like, oh, the basketball purist in me is like, oh, this guy stinks. But because he's so random, like, that's how he succeeds. Like, no one, even, including Lance, I think, no one knows what he's going to do when he has the ball.
because teams like, oh, say, oh, he's a bad 3-point shooter, we won't guard him, but then he hits like 4 threes at one point, and then it's like, okay, do we guard him in 3-point line? But then he can't make, is he going to pass here? He's really kind of selfish at times, but then he likes to make the cool pass. Yeah,
oh,
no.
Oh, he's galloping. Do I back up or do I go at him? Oh, he scored.
Exactly. He sort of makes you think too, but if you think, you've lost, basically. That's what it is. Yes. You think and you've lost by the time you're thinking. I actually think the X factor is going to be Darren Collison, because it's going to be about pushing the pace, because it's about doing the opposite of what the Spurs do, making them run up and down the court. And I think he's going to have to control the offense, because I think they're going to try to do whatever they can at stopping Vic, because I think teams are starting to figure out, hey, we have to just shut down Vic. Well, like you saw in the Cavs game, where the Cavs toward the end of the game just double teamed Vic. It's kind of, that's like a LeBron team special, because LeBron will sort of rove around and help facilitate that. But I just want, you know, DC is going to be super important in just kind of helping counterpunch the slowness of the Spurs.
Yeah, that is true. And I wrote about this. It literally came out today about how he's been very much improved taking care of the ball. His assist to turnover ratio has been in the twos his whole career. This year it's four. So he's really passing and not turning it over, which are things he's not been like known for his whole career. But he's doing it really well this year. And against a Spurs team that's super good on defense, that's going to be really important. So if he can do that, I agree. That's a good pick. He could be crucial.
So you probably know this, but who do you think the top three on the Pacers are in assist to turnovers? Who are the top three?
I don't know. I think
so. You can probably guess the first two.
Collison and Oladipo. Collison and Oladipo are two of them.
Depot is not.
Oh, Corey Joseph's in there.
Yeah, he's two.
Right?
Who do you think three is? You'll never guess who three is.
It's got to be Sabonis.
No, it's Lance.
Oh.
1.99. Depot's 1.4.
No, listen, though. The fact that Lance is third on the team with 1.9 and Collison's at four is crazy.
Oh, it's crazy, but also shows that Lance has actually been effective this year. He's not turning over the ball at a ridiculous rate, is all I'm trying to, prove. Of course, he's probably not throwing that many assists. Well, he's not. I mean, he's three assists a game, which isn't the worst. So, I mean, it's six turnovers a game, theoretically. No, right? Yeah. No, it's flip of that. It's one turnover a game.
The focus being on Collison in this section, though.
I know. I just looked at it and knew I had to ask you that. Sorry.
Any second in dribbles per touch behind Joseph. So the fact that he never turns it over with all that work with the ball, just big improvement from him. And the Spurs are a team that you have to do that against them to win. So.
Yeah, and exactly. You hit it. I mean, if they can't give the Spurs easy points, because the Spurs will find a way to, you know, to creatively create offense that they always do with some of their. You guys, you wouldn't expect to get points because they just aren't the most talented or whatever they are. Like even like Rudy Gay nowadays, I mean, like he's just kind of fit into a role there that's been pretty decent for him. So it's just about, you know, not giving the Spurs easy points and really trying to counter them. And I think DC is the only, I mean, I think Depot can do it if they don't just double team him nonstop or sort of force ball out of his hands, but Collison is going to be a huge factor in that. You want to do all our scores now?
Sure.
All right. So you want to go first? On Trailblazers, want me to go first?
I'll do Blazers first. You know, Napier, like we talked about, if he is playing like he has been, I don't think the Pacers stand any chance. Just the style of Dame with no Miles means he's going to have a great game. And if they have good point guard play the whole time, they're super hard to beat. So I'll assume we have just regular Shabazz Napier, I think is like a 109-100 Blazers win. But I think good Shabazz Napier, and it's like a 123-100 Blazers win.
Okay. I think what they're going to lose probably by 10 or 15 points to the Blazers. I would say probably similar to the same score they had last time. I just think, I mean, the Blazers are a better team. Pacers have some rest, but they don't have the depth without Turner. They play Jefferson a decent amount. So, I mean, I just would lean towards like 118-103 is kind of the score.
Yeah, they're going to score a lot, I feel like, without Turner.
Yeah, I feel like I kind of agree. They're going to really enjoy going to the rim. I don't think they would have turned was there. I'll do Lakers one first. I actually think they pull off the upset. Not an upset, but the back-to-back, the second out of back-to-back win, which is an upset in itself because the schedule lost there. And I think they beat the Lakers like 110-107.
I think they can win this one too. And for the sake of optimism, I guess I'll copy you and say they win this too, but I'm not super confident that they can. I just think they will because they need it. But the back-to-back is going to be interesting. Also, we don't know who's going to play for the Lakers. Always a lot going on in Lakerland, but I'll say lower scoring. I know it's going to be fast-paced, but their 29th offense scares me. So let's go 104-103. Nice. They get a last-second stop to win this one.
Ooh, against the Cavs, similar kind of way. Last-second like stop. Cavs,
yes, except no fluky out-of-bounds stuff. Just a win, a clean win.
Yeah. You want to do Spurs? I'll do Spurs score first too, I guess. Oh, okay. I think they lose to the Spurs by 5. I don't think it's a blowout. I don't think it's any. I think it's just a classic Spurs game. Maybe it's closer by score than it actually ends up being. Maybe they kind of get it close late because the Pacers always seem to kind of pull it in late and then lose their track, lose the distance when it comes to the last 3 or 4 minutes. So I'd say they lose like 102-97. Seems like a fair game for them there.
I don't think that the Spurs will get swept by the Pacers. That is my true answer. If you see Kawhi playing, I think they're going to win by a lot, like 15 or so, and the Pacers are going to struggle to even get to 100. But if they don't have Kawhi, it could be a closer one. They won against no Kawhi already, so we'll have to see. I'm going to go Spurs 101, Pacers 94.
Just okay, so we're
like halfway between Kawhi playing and not playing.
So we got a similar score on that one.
Yeah.
Ish, I guess.
That one's hard.
Before we go, I just wanted to ask you, can you believe LeBron got that 3-point shot off?
No, I mean, what a Kevin Love pass too, man.
I was thinking about it as we talked about the Cat for a second. We didn't really talk about the Cat, but I'm thinking back to that. I mean, how the hell did he get that shot off? That
was incredible. So I watch a lot of the Wizards too. And last year he had that. You remember that one he had against the Wizards last year? Same exact thing, falling out of bounds, banked it.
Yeah, I remember the one in the playoffs against the Bulls a couple years ago too.
Yeah, yeah. Eerily similar. And I was like getting deja vu with the ball in the air. It was so scary. It was so close. What a pass by Kevin Love.
Yeah, and just the fact that he's able to catch the ball, turn on one foot, and have enough power to basically be falling out of bounds and hit the rim, like, full force. Like, I mean, the amount of strength it takes to be able to do that, it's incredible. I think that's the kind of loss you say, wow, LeBron beat you.
That's true. I think every time he loses, I can't believe it. The Pacers won the season series against the Cavs. How cool is that?
I know. And what's so sad is they won't be close to the record, so it won't matter.
Yeah. No, it doesn't matter at all, but they did it. You know, and they did it without Turner twice.
No, and they play them against, baby. They can go for the 4-game sweep for the Cavs. That person gives them a lot of confidence to make the playoffs and play them, even though I don't think it should. But I don't know. The Cavs are.
If they beat the Cavs in their 4th game of the year, I will tweet the Pacers are 4-4 in their last 8 games against the Cavs.
Just remember, sometimes kings have to fall. Eventually, the dynasty falls. You know, it's always sooner than people expect. You know, it happens. You know, the team, the dynasties fall when you least expect it, kind of thing. You don't see it coming most of the times. Usually it's some upset or something kind of like, oh, they have a shot, but they're not going to. Happen to the Lakers with Kobe where the Mavs upset them and won the championship. The Pacers are not going to do that, but maybe Pacers can upset them in a first round series if everything breaks right, you know.
That'd be
good. Thomas isn't healthy, Love stuff, you know, there's things that can break their way.
That would just make the season so peak if that happened.
Yeah, like a 7-2 upset.
The dream scenario has to be that Paul George gets traded to the Cavs at the trade deadline, and then the Pacers beat him in the first round.
They have no way of doing that, though. Paul George and LeBron together, I think Paul and LeBron together would be the like a Scottie Pippen, Michael Jordan better duo.
Oh, yeah, they'd be super good, but it'd be really funny. That'd be full circle Pacers season.
But the Pacers will have one series against the Cavs. That's really the point here. LeBron is still awesome. That shot was amazing. But the Pacers' comeback was even better. And the fact that they managed to.
Lance was just hilarious and amazing in that game.
Yes, he was. He got first time he got on LeBron's head, finally. Most time LeBron just throws him off and goes for 40. So
it worked. Yeah, they might want to sit Lance out the next time they play.
Yeah, I think they play him with the 26th, I think they play him. And I imagine LeBron is going to come full force at Lance.
Yes, I agree.
Which is scary, but you know what? You were going to lose once to them anyway. So just take it.
Get it over with. Exactly.
Exactly. Anything else you got? What are you writing this week?
I got my positional stuff every day. I don't know usually what I'm doing for those days. I just think of something on the day or research a funky stat. But Shooting Guard Tuesdays will be out this day that you are listening to this. I'll probably do a Lance thing because I did a Victor thing last week, and those are the only two shooting guards who really play.
You're telling me you're not going to do a Damian Wilkins? He played
in memoriam.
153-minute breakdown.
In memoriam. No, I will not do a Damian Wilkins one.
All right. Are you going to any practices the next couple of weeks? I know they return home. Not this week. So you won't go.
Days till they're back home. So probably when they get back before that.
And then maybe you'll be game credentialed. Right. Then you may be game credentialed.
Yeah, maybe. That'd be nice. We'll see. That Suns game could be the chance. We will find out, folks. We will find out.
Yep. And it will help. He'll bring some more quality sound to this podcast. We'll be back. I think Tony's going to try to do a mailbag on Wednesday. So it'll be tomorrow. Listen, on a Tuesday. Hit him up with questions at TEastNBA. Hit me up with questions for that same thing. I'll send them to him. We might do it together. Figuring that out ourselves. I'm at FreedmanAdam5 or our Locked On Pacers Twitter feed. Any one of those. Any questions you got, we'll try to answer them. Then we'll do some previews on Thursday, Friday, and probably Sunday for the rest of the week. But that's all we got for today's Locked On Pacers podcast. Have a great rest of your day.